Social Economy Research Partnerships, which is a national research program and a research program intended and has worked, I think, quite successfully in bringing together the academy and communities and different kinds of research and activities associated with the social economy. Now, today's session is to deal with cooperative health. And as we said in the little blurb that we put out, this is a subject about which Canadians are both proud and worried, and it's been a defining aspect of our nationality and a subject of immense pride, and I would say as well as a deliverer of good services. This is not in any way and shape or form a query of the public health system, nor does cooperative health have to be that way. The system is now in question, though, and despite its many strengths, there are always questions about whether it might be improved. And cooperative health services in Canada and many other parts of the world do provide excellent services based on concerns about community health as well as individual health, and on encouraging individual citizens to assume greater responsibility for their own health. Now, during this session, we will have three speakers, and they from Quebec, from Saskatchewan, but she's on the East Coast now, but she's worked in Saskatchewan for a number of years, and she will be speaking about Saskatchewan, and then what are the new initiatives in those jurisdictions, and then what are the obstacles to future development. Now, I would like to say a couple of words about cooperative health. This is not unusual. The International Health Cooperative Organization, which is associated with the International Cooperative Alliance and was established in 1996, it estimates, and I think it's conservatively, that there are cooperative health organizations of different types, and that has to be emphasized, in some 50 countries serving 100 million households. And some countries have particularly large health systems. United States, surprisingly, perhaps to some. China, again, perhaps surprising. Germany, Japan, a particularly interesting movement. France and Brazil, and some other Latin American countries. They take different forms. They are often in the form of pharmacias, which we might think is just a drugstore, but it has different qualities from conventional drugstores as we know them. That's quite common in Europe. Consumer health, consumer-owned health facilities, maybe most interestingly in Japan, where we, the consumers, if you like, own the facilities through a cooperative structure. And then there are health practitioner-owned cooperatives, where the practitioners come together, form a cooperative to operate a facility, which again could actually be a hospital. And then there are service co-ops within the health industry, where different health organizations come together and own a co-op to provide services to themselves. Very common one is home health care facilities that are operated usually by worker cooperative models. In Quebec, as I think we'll hear, all things going well, the ambulance, there are a number of ambulance cooperatives. And there are also some interesting connections with insurance organizations in providing private care. Well, I can go on and on, but all I wanted to do was to suggest that the health, the cooperative model within the health world is not unusual, and there's always an era of excitement when people are starting new organizations, and there should be, but the point is simply that there's more than enough examples to prove that it's not just a wild idea. So, I think we will begin, and very pleased to welcome our speakers today, who are very knowledgeable in their regions and in other ways as well. And first is Catherine Leventon-Reed. She's an assistant professor at the Shannon School of Business in Cape Breton University in Sydney, Nova Scotia. Catherine worked for several years in Saskatchewan at the Centre for Cooperatives and at the regional node of the Canadian Social Economy Research Partnerships. And one of her roles there was to do some work on healthcare, and particularly healthcare, cooperative healthcare, and its relationship to First Nations people. So, Catherine, welcome.
Thanks very much. So I'll start by answering the first question, which is what is the extent and nature of health co-ops in Saskatchewan? So health co-ops in Saskatchewan focus on offering primary health care services. So they really operate very much like community health centers in other provinces like Ontario and Nova Scotia. But in terms of terminology, they call themselves community clinics rather than community health centers or CHCs. And just like the CHCs, the Saskatchewan clinics offer a range of services to their members and clients, so from consultations with doctors to physiotherapy, counseling services, and nutrition. They also have labs on site, and two of the clinics have pharmacies, and doctors work on salary rather than on a fee for item of service basis. So there are currently four of these community clinics in the province. Three are located in the larger urban centers there, so Prince Albert, Regina, and Saskatoon, and then there's one located in a smaller community outside of Saskatoon called the Wynyard Clinic. There is a fifth clinic right now in Saskatchewan in Kindersley, but it's currently not open because they don't have any doctors available. There's also a federation of community clinics in Saskatchewan, and it meets at least twice a year, and the executive directors of the clinics are in contact more often than that. And the goal of the federation is to have a venue through which they can share common challenges and also have a collective voice to lobby government when they need to. But one difference is that the clinics in Saskatchewan are incorporated under the Cooperatives Act, so they are bona fide co-ops. Typically, they're governed by their user members, although there is room in the legislation to have health care providers on the board as well. So I believe the legislation states that 3 out of 12 directors can actually be staff or providers. It is a minority of seats that can be held by staff. And the legislation does state that they are not allowed to participate in board discussions around staffing issues. Co-ops in Saskatchewan are currently not present in other types of healthcare delivery like Ian was talking about, so they're not involved in home care, they're not involved in nursing home care, there are no ambulance co-ops owned and operated by workers. And just as a really brief background, the clinics in Saskatchewan that are there today have been around since 1962. They grew out of the doctor's strike. The doctor's strike happened in Saskatchewan in 1962 because doctors were concerned about the Medical Insurance Act that was passed, and they thought they were going to lose their autonomy. So they went on a strike, and the clinics were formed by consumer activists and doctors who supported the clinic model of healthcare delivery. Just one other important feature of these Saskatchewan clinics, and I know this is different from at least the clinics operating in Manitoba, and that is that they do have global budgets. So this means that while the province tells them how much they have to pay their doctors and their nurse practitioners, the rest of the funds that they receive from the government can be allocated as the board and management wishes. So these clinics do operate in an autonomous fashion. So the next question was about what are some of the new initiatives happening in the province. So I'm going to answer that first more broadly. So there is some co-op development starting in the province around services for seniors and seniors housing. So people are, for example, talking about home support services delivered through co-ops, which would at least help seniors age in place. So just last spring, the Saskatchewan Co-op Association received $80,000 from the provincial government for a 2-year period to do some co-op development in this area. So what's not part of the mix, at least not as far as I can see anyway, is a provincial strategy to fund services like home support like they do in Quebec. So I'm not particularly optimistic about where this is going to go. So, for example, my understanding was that a few years ago there was a home support co-op that offered services briefly in Tisdale, a community outside of Regina, but it wasn't really viable because seniors couldn't pay the full amount for the services being offered by the cooperative. So another new initiative, kind of broadly speaking, is that, as some of you might know, there's a federation of healthcare co-ops which is going to be a pan-Canadian federation that is starting to get organized with the support of the cooperators and the Canadian Cooperative Association. And membership would include organizations that are different types of health, health-related co-ops, not just health centers. And the Federation of Community Clinics in Saskatchewan is very interested in being part of this pan-Canadian federation. And so new initiatives, more locally speaking, I'm going to talk about the Saskatoon Community Clinic, because that's the community clinic that I've been most involved with over the past 2.5 years. I was on their board of directors. And what has gone on there is the expansion of their clinic that operates in the inner city, and this is called their Westside Community Clinic. This clinic predominantly serves low-income and Aboriginal households from the inner city, and it has really been bursting at the seams for the past several years because of the demand for services. The demand in these services in these neighborhoods is so great, and this is because there are a few other healthcare providers located there. And they're also dealing with very complex cases because individuals who go to the West Clinic need health care services because they have inadequate housing, they don't have access to food because that part of the city is a food desert, and they also may be battling substance abuse. There's also been an incredible increase in HIV/AIDS among the client group over at the Westside Clinic. So this means that the clinic has had to bring in specialists from the University of Saskatchewan, but they've had incredibly limited physical space in which they can do that. So anyway, the clinic was able to, last winter, purchase at a very reasonable cost a three-story building that was used as a private medical clinic operating in that part of the city, and they bought it from a retiring doctor. And they were able to open the clinic this summer. They got funding for the clinic through the clinic's foundation. The clinic also used some of its reserves. The province chipped in, and they also have established partnerships with local health providers, like people at the University of Saskatchewan. And so one really wonderful development that's going on over at the West Side is that the clinic partnered with the College of Dentistry, and the bottom floor of the clinic is being leased to the College of Dentistry. And there, it hasn't opened yet, the dental services, but there are five dental chairs down there. I think it's five anyway, and the dental services will be offered to individuals living in the inner city at low or at no cost. So that's really an amazing development that's happening there. The Regina Community Clinic has also recently launched a fundraising campaign, so it also can increase its clinic space. Anyway, the last question, which is a really big one, obstacles to future development. I think there are some major ones. One is that healthcare services in Saskatchewan are managed by health regions, right? And so while the existing clinics have been able to maintain their autonomy, even since regionalization has taken place, it's difficult for new clinics to form. This is because the province allocates funding to regions and not to standalone organizations, with the exception of the existing clinics. But there is kind of one, I guess, a silver lining to that, and that is that the health regions in Saskatchewan are being criticized for having too many layers of management, and that they're very costly to operate. And then there have been some layoffs in the health regions over the past year. And so some people are pointing to the community clinic model as a model of healthcare that's efficient, in that very little of the funding it receives actually goes to management. So there may be a little bit of potential there. So it's not necessarily, this regionalization isn't necessarily a complete obstacle. But another obstacle, a serious obstacle, I think, to the future development of co-ops in the province for healthcare delivery, is that the current government, I don't think, is interested in citizen involvement in healthcare services. So, for example, when these regions were formed, their boards were elected, and now they're appointed by the provincial government. Another good example of this is that there is a nonprofit umbrella organization in the province for all health services. It's called SAHO. And every year at its AGM, SAHO would debate resolutions put forward by member organizations and then act on the ones that were passed. So, for example, the community clinic put forward a resolution a few years ago about the cosmetic use of pesticides in the province. It was passed by member organizations, and then SEHO and acted on it, and the outcome was that the province adopted a model bylaw for municipalities to use on cosmetic pesticides. So anyway, the SEHO board has very recently decided that there will no longer be space in its organization to debate resolutions because they say that the advocacy work that they've been doing in the past has prevented them from establishing true partnerships with government. So I just think that's another example of there being kind of a chill on citizen involvement right now in healthcare services. And a last kind of very serious example of this disinterest in citizen engagement is that, and involvement, is that it really looks like the provincial government is moving to private for-profit clinics to address long wait times in the province for surgeries and diagnostic tests. And, of course, when you move to private for-profit clinics, there's no room at all for citizen involvement at all in decision-making. I know I'm running out of time here, so I'll just talk about a third obstacle to future development of co-ops in the province. I think has to do with membership development, and what I mean by this is ensuring that we have the next generation of members in place who are going to fight to maintain that the co-op model and of healthcare delivery. For example, the Saskatoon Community Clinic is the largest clinic, but it isn't taking on any new patients because it's at capacity. And then you also see that while membership is very active, like we have very good turnout at members' meetings, younger people aren't involved in the clinic. So that's an issue they're struggling with right now. And then at the Westside Clinic, the clinic operating in the inner city, you have a different problem where you have younger clients, but they aren't able to focus on membership or governance because they're really focused on making ends meet. So anyway, I'll leave it at that, and I'll so Ian, I'm done.
I'm sorry, but thank you very much, Catherine. It's Ian McPherson again.
Yep.
I've been a bad lad because I forgot to do two things. One of them, although everybody's been remarkably good about this because everyone's been very quiet, if you would push *6, and that would mute your line, and so if you wish to have your cup of coffee and eat a muffin, whatever, you can do that, and then just push it again when you wish to participate later on. Secondly, we're running a chat room currently with this. It was on the same mail out, but to remind you of it, and you can find it at www.chatzy, chatzy.com/CSEHub, CSEHUB. So it's www.chatzy.com/CSEHub. Sorry, I forgot to do that. Okay, our second speaker is from British Columbia, and he is John Ristakis, who is the Executive Director of the BC Co-op Association, and he has a long resume, but we'll just simply say that among his many duties, he's had enthusiasms has been support for the development of a cooperative healthcare in British Columbia. John?
Yeah, hi, folks. Thank you, Ian. It's interesting listening to the previous speaker how many of the issues that were brought up are echoed here in BC around the barriers and the challenges around, you know, establishing a co-op health sector in the province. And I'll touch on those in a few moments. But just sort of following the plan of attacks that was suggested to us here, I'll talk a little bit about the background and the history of the rise of health co-ops in BC first, and then provide a kind of an overview of, you know, the variety and number of health co-ops that are currently operating in BC, and then finally I'll close on some reflections on what the issues and the barriers are that need to be addressed to move the model forward, but also perhaps touch on some strategies and some policies I think that need to be implemented in the province to actually make health co-ops an important part of the health scene in BC. First of all, I guess it's interesting. The first health co-op, I think, in BC was established as long ago as 1946. I think it was the second one after the first health co-op was established in Quebec. But really not much happened, you know, after that until, you know, really in the 90s, I think then in 1998 or 1999, there was a health co-op, the Rainbow Community Health Co-op, that was established in Surrey with the help of the provincial government at that time. And then really not much action until 2002. When, in a way similar to the experience of Saskatchewan, there was a conflict between the doctors and the Ministry of Health in BC around negotiating fee schedules and doctor rates and so on, and the doctors went on kind of a withholding of service in a large number of communities in BC at that time. And it was then that I felt, and the BC Co-op Association at that time took the initiative to establish an outreach and education program targeted to communities across the province to raise their understanding and awareness that there was an alternative here that they could start thinking about, which is co-op health. So we got some funding, and we organized quite an extensive outreach and education campaign that went on for about 2 years. And we organized workshops on health co-ops in a lot of communities around BC, probably close to 19 or 20 communities, with the intention of trying to seed some interest and then provide technical assistance and support for the creation of new health co-ops, which would provide an alternative to the conventional system of the fee-for-service system funded directly by the province, or at the time the increasing move towards privatized healthcare. And we found a very interesting and ready response to the idea, and a number of projects were seeded at that time. Only a handful of them have actually survived into the present time, and there's you know, a number of reasons for that, which I'll explain in a second. But currently, there are about 10 or 11 health co-ops or health-related co-ops operating in BC, and they range from more sort of established models like the community health clinic. On, you know, the model of sort of the Saskatoon and the Regina health co-ops in Saskatchewan, to small worker co-ops of professional caregivers, you know, operating on a contract basis or on a fee-for-service basis, largely in the provision of home care. So, and in between that, there's an increasing number of communities that are establishing co-op models for the provision of elder care. That seems to be the area that most of the new initiatives seem to be focusing on. And then finally, there's an area of the provision of supports or health service supports to a variety of organizations and communities. And, for example, there's a group here called Umbrella Co-op, and they are sort of modeled on the Multicultural Health Brokers Co-op in Edmonton. And the interest there is to provide support services, assistance to new Canadians and new arrivals in the immigrant community, and largely in the lower mainland here in Vancouver. So I want to sort of go down the list here and give you a more precise sense of the co-ops. There are three currently community health co-ops that are in some fashion operating a community health clinic or providing sort of a primary care or having on staff physicians or dentists, other health providers. First of these that was established is Community First Health Co-op in Nelson, and they are now occupying quite a large site in near downtown Nelson, where they are operating health services in a shared facility that also houses health specialists and health providers of a range of disciplines, from chiropractic and nutritional services and acupuncture services and holistic health practices. They have a small pharmacy in that facility and so on. It's a fully tenanted building. It provides a major source of revenue to the health co-op, and by all accounts, it's doing very, very well. It's going to become a major institution in that community. There is the Pacific Rim Health Co-op, which is operating in Port Alberni. They, too, are just preparing to move into a new facility, and they will be offering family care services through, I think it's three doctors that are have been recruited to that health co-op, and possibly even a fourth, I believe. So they too are going to be establishing themselves as a major health provider in the Port Alberni and sort of the Mid-Island area on Vancouver Island. And then the most recent development on this model is the recent incorporation of the Victoria Community Health Co-op in Victoria. They have been undergoing a very intensive outreach and community education and recruitment campaign for the last 2 years, and are now moving into a facility that is going to be a sort of a partnership with the James Bay Community Health Center in downtown Victoria. So those are three health co-ops that are basing themselves in a community health clinic model of some description. And then there's about half a dozen or five or six elder care co-ops, which also have an important housing component and provide also assisted living and personal care services to their members. So there's a group called CLECA, which is just getting underway in around Kootenai Lake, around Nelson. There is Grandview Heights, which is an elder care housing community in Castlegar, just outside of Nelson again, and they're in the process of developing, a pretty ambitious seniors housing development, and they're about halfway through the construction of the units that are planned for that community.
John, it's Ian. I'm sorry, we're going to run short of time, so is there any way you could speed it up? That'd be great. Thanks.
So that's the kind of the range and the variety of health co-ops. Just to touch on some of the barriers, the key one I would say is the outlook and the perspective of the provincial government, its understanding of what healthcare should be in the province, and secondly, the regional health authority structure, which is replicating exactly the kinds of barriers, the bureaucratic constraints that was mentioned earlier about Saskatchewan. There is also the problem of lack of a source of reliable capital, startup capital, and funding for the establishment and operation of the health co-ops in BC. What that requires, I think, is not only more education and awareness of the health co-op model on the part of the health authorities and decision makers around health policy in the province. It requires a concerted and organized strategy among the health co-ops and other stakeholders in the province to convey both co-op model and also to try turn around some of the health policies that restrict both the funding and support of co-op healthcare as a model in the province.
Thanks very much, John. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Our third speaker is Jean-Pierre Girard. Jean-Pierre is a major researcher in this field, one of the very best in the world, who's done a lot of work within Quebec and Canada and also elsewhere. And we're particularly pleased because Jean-Pierre had a very tough time fitting this into his schedule. He is a lecturer and a researcher affiliated with the Institut de Recherche et d'Education pour les Coopératives et les Mutuelles to the Université de Sherbrooke. And it just happened today was a very difficult day for him, so we're very appreciative of his being here. Jean-Pierre.
Yes, thank you, Ian. I'm happy to be with you today here in Quebec. This is a subject with a high attention coming from media, and I'm hot on the subject since I'm getting out of hour-long interview, radio interview, so it's a good timing. Okay, you know, apart from ambulance co-op and home services co-op, here in Quebec we have close to 25 health co-op run under mostly what we call a multi-stakeholder model, which is in our law in Quebec, Solidarité Co-op, which means three kinds of membership: users, workers, and support members. These health co-op run has been set up under two main models. The first one is funding a new clinic in order to attract doctors in the community. The second model is buying existing clinic in order to save services and keep doctors in place. Physicians remains independent entrepreneurs who rent office space and are remunerated on a fee-for-services base by the public health system. Since 2 years, a federation gathering health co-op has been set up in Quebec, so now they offer a place where health co-op can share their IDs and broke isolation. In fact, I'm not speaking on behalf federation today, I'm only speaking on behalf myself. Okay. And in terms of new initiatives, more and more health co-ops try to implement health prevention and promotion program like Hands Group Japan's model, which is a model that gathering citizens for a meeting every month in order to have a better knowledge of their own health and sharing good ideas about health with other citizens. Hands Group generally gathering around 10 to 15 members. Also, another new idea coming from health co-op is the fact that they're trying to develop new services with the collaboration of doctors. For instance, developing or introducing alternative medicine. If we talk about some problem or a future challenge, well, to be honest with you, over the years, some health co-op ask their members if they agree to pay annual fee apart their social share, which is a one-shot payment. This question of annual fee became a very, very sensitive issue since it appeared to introduce a two-tier system and limited access for GPs only for members. In fact, at my knowledge, if health co-op lay on this ground, it's a very limited number of health co-op. Most of the health co-op in Quebec who impose this system of annual fee follow this road only to improve health services and not to limited access to physicians. In order to attract physicians, health co-op in Quebec have also to compete with large pharmacy chains like Shoppers Drug Mart, which is Pharmaprix in Quebec. But the most important competition came from Groupe Jean Coutu, which is the largest pharmacies network in Quebec. Why pharmacy chains would like to buy, own, and manage medical clinic? It's a very simple answer to that. It's because it's really close to the office of the pharmacy, and of course, it helps keep profitable the best as possible their prescription department. So, in fact, today, in 2010, the most important owners of medical clinic in Quebec is a pharmacy. So this is really a tough time for Health Co-op in Quebec having to compete with this large pharmacy in order to attract doctors. So if I can summarize my view, this is, I think, the most tough challenge for Health Co-op in Quebec. Apart that, if Health Co-op would like to attract more interest of population, in my view, they have to follow the track of health promotion programs, hands group, and other original way to improve health system. Thank you.
Good.
Ian, completed.
Hey, Ian, come on.
Ah, okay. I'm sorry. I'm getting confused with the mute thing. That's why I'm particularly interested in these co-ops for aging people, I think. But anyway, I want to thank the three speakers, and I think their talks have demonstrated the potential, the kinds of interests there are, and the complexities. In starting health co-ops, we're in an area of great contention and uncertainties in our world. So I think it's inevitable there will be the debates, and I'm sure we will do well in those debates, those of us who are interested in health cooperatives. Again, I want to remind you of the chat line. There's some discussion beginning there. I'd also tell you that the chat line will be open for the rest of the day. And so if we start a conversation there, we can continue it on to the end of the day, people being available. The other thing I would say is if you wish to hear some of the talks again, and I'm sure you do, then by tomorrow or noon, they will be up on the Canadian Social Economy Hub website. So you can re-listen to them or tell your friends, have all your neighbors in for a party tomorrow night and listen to it. All right, so let's begin. Who has some questions? Please identify yourself and try to keep your questions as short as you can. So anyone in the I guess we call it a listening audience, who has a question? Perhaps I might start with one. Jean-Pierre, could I ask you about the fees for those co-ops who start? What is the level of those? Would you know approximately what they would be?
Yes, it can be around $50 to $100 a year.
A year?
Yeah, a year. So this is not a social fare. As I say, it's an annual fee, so they have to pay every year, as I say, between $50 to $100.
And in return for that, they get, I would think from what I know of your system and what I know of the ones in Saskatoon, that money is used for the kinds of services that are not generally provided or very inadequately provided by the existing health system. Would that be fair to say?
Yes, but the problem over here in Quebec is the fact that some new health co-op use this money in order to offer a rebate to doctors. So a rebate for the rent of the space. So at this point, it became, as I say, very sensitive, because if you're not a member of this kind of health co-op, well, you don't have any access to the doctors, which is, in my view, a big problem.
Yeah. Well, that's a problem, presumably, though, that can be dealt with, but we will proceed there.
John here, Rastakis. I just wanted to sort of add a comment around this question of not just user fees, but capitalizing health co-ops. And I wouldn't mind getting some feedback from others that are listening in here. Our experience here, my perspective has been those co-ops that have actually been able to establish themselves and actually provide a service have had to do it and quite independently of public funding and the regional health authorities. And so, for example, Community First Health Co-op in Nelson the Pacific Rim Health Co-op in Port Alberni, I mean, they've been able to establish themselves by raising the capital and the funding quite outside sort of the mainstream conventional sort of health system in BC. So the question that arises for me as a major issue is, can we put in place systems of community funding and capitalization, loan programs, and so on, which may include strategies like user fees, to actually allow these community health co-ops to get themselves up and started in the face of, you know, real opposition and reluctance and bureaucracy from the mainstream health system.
Vanessa Hammond here from the Victoria Community Health Co-op. One of the tools that we think will be essential in raising funding is to prove cost effectiveness of health co-ops. We often hear that health co-ops are highly cost effective, but it seems difficult to get the statistical information to support this claim. Can anyone help with that?
Catherine, do you have any insights from Saskatoon?
Well, I don't have any insights from Saskatoon, but I do know that there is a study out there that you can get a copy from the Canadian Cooperative Association. It's probably 20 years old now, but others of you know it. One of the authors, they were from Queen's University. Magma, I believe, was one of the authors, and they did, in essence, demonstrate that community health centers operate on a more cost-effective basis than other kinds of providers. I think that it's an excellent question, and I think that perhaps, like John was saying earlier, you know, the co-op sector itself maybe needs to take on organizing, you know, the model and promoting the model, educating policymakers about the model. The co-ops also need to take on documenting and disseminating information about how cost-effective they are. So, establishing partnerships with researchers early on, and believe me, there are researchers out there who are very interested in working with you on those questions, so that you have the information available. You can make the case, so if other providers out there aren't willing to share their information, you can be transparent and you can demonstrate how cost-effective you are.
This is Ian again. I was on the board of the CCA, and I think Conclaim triggered that study. It's my recollection, the savings on health care and delivery were around 15%. Now, that's assuming, as I recall it, salaried doctors. And that does not mean that the salaried doctors receive less. But by using that technique, by streamlining the way in which the clinic operates, there are savings that can happen. But that study needs to be updated. I was also involved in the startup of Norwest Health Co-op in Winnipeg way back in the 70s. And the savings that came from more careful administration of the health centers and of the clinics, I should say, were really very substantial. The point, to be a bit harsh maybe, but the point is that many doctors are very busy and they should be applauded for that in looking after their patients and their clients, and they don't necessarily spend a whole lot of time making sure the office is run properly or as tidily and as quickly as it can. What the health clinic does is to give doctors complete the capacity to have complete attention on their work as health providers, and that's an important point. Now, how that works when you're in a health system such as the one we have in British Columbia, fee for service is a challenge, which people involved with the health clinic in Victoria are finding ways to resolve. And I'll just say one other thing. I think in the case of Nelson, it was important to note that the credit union was a strong supporter of that, and I don't think they put any of their member money at risk in doing so. But they used their capacity to amass social influence and to build that clinic, their center, I should say. I think there are credit unions around who would be sympathetic to this, but I also have to say that in terms of the Victoria Health Co-op, one of the banks was much more interested and supportive of the way in which it was proposed as a business operation. You prepare a business plan and it makes sense or it doesn't. And fortunately for the people involved in the Victoria one, the business plan made sense. But that doesn't provide the as easy a way, as convenient a way to build these kinds of organizations. And I agree entirely with John and Catherine that it's time to start thinking seriously about how to mobilize resources so that good plans, good approaches can receive the kind of financial support, and I would hope from the cooperative sector in the future. And I'm talking too much. Are there other questions? Anyone?
Yes, Yvonne here in Quebec City.
Thank you.
Hello. Yes, Jean-Pierre probably could confirm some of the things I want to mention, but I think it's important to say that for some communities, at least, it's either a health clinic, a co-op health, or no clinic at all. Because it's for doctors or like large pharmacy chains, they won't invest and keep a clinic in a small community. It's not. It don't make any money. So this is one of the reasons why I think probably I live in Quebec City, so we don't have that model in this city here. But in many cases, I don't know, maybe half. I don't know. Maybe Jean-Pierre could mention this, but they would have no services at all. So it means even if you pay, let's say, $50 or $100 a year, it's cheaper than, let's say, driving about a half hour to a larger city to see a doctor or to go to a hospital for just outpatients and so forth. So, I mean, this is something. On the other hand, the people who are very strong in the health sector say the government should solve the problem. It should not be co-ops or private clinics. But to be realistic, people understand this. And in these small communities, people know each other. And as mentioned in a radio program a couple of weeks ago, is that often in the community, 70 to 80% of the people do join and become members. They pay annual fees. Usually the municipality also gets involved. Sometimes they even help the group want to put the co-op up to organize this. And if you don't have a medical doctor in a small town, then the same thing that happened some years ago with postal services, and then the school closes and everything. So this is very, very important to keep smaller communities living and have health services and have a healthier community. So I think this is one of the things that's important. But the other thing was that, and Jean-Pierre was saying, that was very, very on a radio and television program here with Radio Canada, is that in some of these clinics, they were saying, if you're not a member, you can't have an appointment with a doctor, and that's against the law. So that was one of the problems, but it seems to be only a very few of the co-ops who either did not know that they should do it. But anyway, this is what I feel has been quite important here in Quebec, in the smaller communities and smaller towns in the province.
Any reaction to that comment? Thank you very much.
Yes, Ian, this is Jean-Pierre. I totally agree with the comment of Yvonne, because, no one cares about this question, that if you don't have any services close from your village, your community, well, you have to drive yourself, you have to spend time, and you have to, pay money for all these services, but no one cares about that. But in fact, if you have to do that, you pay, this is apart from what you pay in the income. So this is a very important issue. And that, of course, helps to understand why citizens agree to pay annual fee, because when they compare, if they pay annual fee, I don't know, $50, or they have to pay for the petrol and the I don't know, the meals when they have to drive out for another clinic, well, they prefer to pay annual fee for the health co-op.
John, further comments?
I wanted to sort of come back to an earlier point around the obstacle around health policy in at the provincial level. I mean, in even though there are these challenges that Jean-Pierre you're alluding to in Quebec, that's still within an environment where there is a public recognition and some level of public support through the provincial government for the operation of co-ops and the provision of health care. And that is not the case outside of Quebec, almost anywhere, as far as I know. In British Columbia, the question of, let's come back to the issue, for example, of documenting the cost efficiencies of the model as opposed to, other models. I think that's important. I think it's important to do the evaluations and the documentation and present the case. But I'm not at all convinced, I'm not actually very optimistic that that's going to make the difference because you have an outlook that is very, very kind of constrained to, one, understanding efficiency in terms of single providers with lots of capital that can provide a wide range of services through one service contract, for example, for regional health authorities. That's how they think about efficiency. That's how they think about cost savings. And community-based health co-ops don't have the deep pockets or the range of services and capacity to bid successfully against that kind of a competitor. And so it's very much a question of political pressure and finding a way to actually make the case, not just kind of on the basis of cost benefit and service quality and so on, but simple political pressure to get political support, maybe from the opposition parties, to change kind of public policy perceptions around what constitutes effective, cost-effective health care. It certainly does not mean community-based health care in BC.
Thank you, John. Are there other reactions from people who are listening in? My guess is that many of the people who are listening in today are first-time listeners on and inquirers into this form of health delivery. So I hope if that kind of is intimidating to you, that you'll use the chat line that is now percolating along nicely and ask questions that occur to you now or subsequently. And again, it's going to be open all day. I'd like to go back to a point that was raised earlier. And that is, I think when you think of communities in which health services are at risk, and I think that Nelson would have fitted into that in some ways, you can easily see the case for such organizations. But there's another issue that I think is more widespread, or is as widespread, and that is that in our major cities, it is very difficult for some people, and it can be income levels, it could be knowledge, it could be ethnicity, a whole range of things, in which securing good health care is difficult. We know, for example, in Victoria, that there's a sizable number of people who do not have doctors, who have difficulty getting doctors. And the kind of systematic, caring attention that can mean for a family. So that is a real problem. I mean, the delivery of health services to people in an urban environment is far from equal and even. and that's within our public health system. So, and that's an issue for people who care about communities and people within them. I think that's a something that we need to constantly keep in mind. The capacity of health co-ops to treat people who have no or limited access to doctors and have serious diseases is all, or health issues, have is always a problem. You can only absorb so many, as it were, within an existing institution, but surely we can reach out farther than the existing system is doing right now. So,
I would like to ask a question.
Ah, thank you.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
Oh, good.
Could you identify yourself and tell us where you're from?
My name is Sarah Torres. I am a PhD student at the University of Ottawa, and I'm doing my studies understanding the work of the multicultural health brokers in Edmonton.
Ah.
So I'm very curious about the both things. You mentioned that in Saskatchewan, there is an initiative with an Aboriginal clinic where the Aboriginals are facing other issues linked to social determinants of health. So I wonder if you could expand a little bit more, because that is my experience on studying the Multicultural Health Brokers Co-op, is that they're doing health promotion and perinatal work, but the people that they work with have very, very complex needs.
That's right. Well, I think in the case of the Saskatoon Community Clinic, it partners with a large number of organizations to try to address some of those social determinants of health. So, for example, it works with a local food security organization, and it provides, it started off by being a drop-off site for a good food box program, right, where people buy fruits and vegetables at lower cost because they're purchased in bulk. But they were finding that their clients weren't able to, in fact, make a monthly payment for their fruits and vegetables. And so what they were doing instead is that the food security organization was just dropping off some fruits and vegetables into the waiting room of the community clinic, and people were purchasing them kind of individually. So that's one way, very basic way, that they were addressing a social determinant of health. They were also having, there was a kitchen in the old site. I don't know what they're doing about the kitchen in the new site, but anyway, so they were offering they had a community kitchen there as well, where there were people meeting regularly to make large food to take home. So they also have a food, fitness, and fun program, so where they have exercise equipment made available to people in the inner city, because they don't commonly have access to those kinds of facilities in that neighborhood, etc. You know, they do work with the Community Development Corporation there, who works in the area of housing. So absolutely, they recognize what they can and can't do with the staff that they have on hand, and establish partnerships when they need to address those social determinants.
Mm. Okay, so I guess my last question is, how do you feel then that this model of doing health promotion and not the clinical aspect of the work, how does it fit within the health co-op context? Because most of the presentations focus on the work of the health co-ops as clinics. And so is there a trend to have different models, or...
Do you wish to answer that, Catherine, from the point of view?
I can, but can you just repeat the question? I'm not sure I got it.
Well, it's because most of the health co-ops that exist in Canada are based on clinics, right? Providing clinical health services.
Go ahead, continue.
I'm just wondering because I know the speaker from BC, you also mentioned that there is an initiative in BC trying to do them similar as the Multicultural Health Brokers Co-op. So I'm just wondering if there is, and at the Quebec speaker, you also mentioned about doing health promotion and prevention. So I'm just wondering if you see that indeed there is potential for health cooperatives doing health promotion and...
I might try to answer that. We're also running close to that time. There, in 2007, there were nearly 120 health cooperatives in Canada with nearly 112,000 members. Largest number was in Quebec, over 60.
There are only about a dozen clinics, the way you described. So the bulk of them actually are concerned with other forms of helping in the health industries. And the ambulances is one, but there are senior care, and there's a whole range of them. I would suggest to you that you go down and talk to people in the co-op secretariat in the Agriculture Canada and ask them about any evidence they have or the indications they have about other kinds of health cooperatives, of which there are many. Okay, so it's all the way out there to the by the lake, but it's a nice it's
all
a
right,
nice
come on in.
Okay. Yeah, I think we do have to wind up. We've had a question about the Queen study. We can get that on to the website. I also are on to the chat line. I also would suggest that you look at, I was involved with something called the BC Institute for Co-op Studies, which no longer exists now. But we did some studies on health, and it was you can get access to them, I do believe, through the successor organization, which has a different focus, but it's called the Center for Cooperative and Community-Based Economy. And if you Google that, Center for Cooperative and Community-Based Economy, I do believe you can find two more papers that I think actually there were three, because we were trying within that organization to do a lot to boost this approach to individual and community health. And so I think some of those papers were still, one in particular, is still quite useful, and the others I hope will have something of value. Well, I think we've come to the end of our time. I remind you that the chat line is there. Please use it, and we will keep it open for the day. If something occurs to you after lunch, if those of us who are out here on the beautiful coast, please add it in, and we'll try to do our best to answer it. I'm not sure whether Jean-Pierre is going to be able to participate much in that because he does have such a busy day, but. I would like to thank the three speakers. I'd like to thank you all for your attention. If you have any suggestions about how we might have a further conversation this way on health cooperatives, raising issues that you are particularly interested in, please put those on the chat line and we'll see what we can do. Okay? Again, thank you all so very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Ian.
Thanks. Bye. Okay.